It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What does it take to get into the Basketball Hall of Fame? Is Julius Randle underrated? Are the Nets in better shape than the Celtics? The only question left is, say it with me, you win. Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown Podcast. As always, I am joined by Jared Weiss of The Athletic. Is it The Athletic or is it The Athletic?
Depends what mood you're in, I think.
Okay, well then, I'm in a The mood right now, so it's The Athletic. And Jared from the road, thank you for hopping on with us today.
That's right, I got the Springfield Hall, the NBA Hall of Fame, or I guess Basketball Hall of Fame in the background right now. And Team USA is not losing on the other side of the world. It's a pretty interesting time.
Well, you know, it's a good distinction to make that the Basketball Hall of Fame versus the NBA Hall of Fame, because I think it doesn't that sort of skew some of the results, or not skew them, but make them, you know, some guys might have an amazing, like, college career, and that could very well, you know, be the reason they get in, maybe as much as they are with their NBA seasons or whatever. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, Vlade Divac is going to be getting inducted here next week, and I think it's, for the most part, for his international career combined with – I mean, he was a very good NBA player, but definitely was not, you know, a Hall of Fame NBA player. And that's why Manu has always been considered a first ballot Hall of Famer. That, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think you would agree he's a first ballot Hall of Famer for what he did in the NBA. But it's that international career that really puts him over the top. So I like how they balance that. I think college is overrated, though. Like, college is an amateur level. While it's great and, like, it's extremely popular, it's like what you achieve in the international level is probably way more valuable than what you achieve at the college level.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that maybe like 30 years ago, I would have said, you know, college, if you did, you know, or a great college player then, sure, that gives you a bump versus now. And then you'd say, well, what's the difference? Oh, there's the one and dones. But here's the thing about that. How many one and dones are there every year now? 12?
They're all one and done pretty much. Yeah.
They are?
I mean, a pretty strong number of them, yeah.
All right. I mean, we should count it. I bet you there weren't more than 15 in the last draft, which is half the first round, right? Once you get in the second round, you're talking about guys who played 2 years, 3 years, right? I mean, crazy.
I think you're accurate in that. I'm thinking about it from a more colloquial perspective.
But either way, sure. The point being that, like, I'm not even so sure.
Not what it used to be.
Yeah, but I'm not even so sure that the one and done thing is such a huge effect. I mean, we're all grinding our hands about whether we should let the high school players back in, all that stuff. It's really talking about affecting such a minuscule amount of players, considering of, you know, all of college basketball, that it really shouldn't have an effect. But I think we can all agree that the level of play, and by the way, I think you know what it is. It's less the one and done. This must be the answer. I just came up with it. Was, you know, it's the two and dones or the three and dones. Back 30 years ago, you had all 4 year players. Maybe it's 30 years ago. Well, maybe I have to figure out the numbers. So that's when you had all seniors going against all seniors. That was a lot higher level of play, I would argue, than it is now, even though the skill level is a bit better and like the athletes are probably better. And even then at that level, that is an interesting thing that might be worth exploring more at some point in the future. What do you think?
It's funny. You could maybe even argue that the players coming into the league are better coming into the league now than they used to be, while they're also younger, it seems, because I guess just the way that players improve in their youth careers is better than ever before. But yeah, I mean, those teams back in the day were mostly upperclassmen who had been in the program together and knew each other for a long time and had been coached by that coach for a while. So the quality of play, I think, was pretty superior. Although, on the other hand, the quality of basketball 20 years ago is pretty crappy anyway. So I think the teams nowadays probably would beat them anyway just because they play smarter basketball.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call it crappy. I mean, we didn't have maybe some of the sort of the dribbling. They didn't shoot as much from the three. But, like, you know, they were good, polished players who knew how to play the game. And I don't know. I might even argue that most of the one-and-dones aren't really ready either for the NBA. you know, for every one guy who comes in and really plays well, there's got to be a few that are just completely lost and takes them a year and a half, two seasons before they can figure it out. I mean, right? Like, I'm trying to think of the last guy who was like a one and done and was just so polished and ready to go that didn't have any bumps. You know, not to put you on the spot, but like, right? Do you know what I mean? I feel like it's not even – that's still a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I still just think about it as guys who are ready for the league and guys who are projects. And the one I always go back to is Dennis Smith Jr. versus Jonathan Isaac. And I remember the one – I think I brought this up recently is that I remember tweeting at the time that the Magic made a horrible mistake taking Jonathan Isaac over DSJ because they needed a point guard at the time and he seemed like a guaranteed – you know, a point guard of the future, and he just seemed like there was nowhere for him to go but up. And I'm always someone who believes in drafting the best player, even if they're a project, and I totally just missed the boat on that one. And looking at Jonathan Isaac now, I think I'd much rather have him than Smith Jr., obviously. But DSJ, even though he's a one-and-done guy, he seemed like he was so ready for the league, and it seemed like he was going to be kind of what Donovan Mitchell has become, and he just ended up, at least so far, has been a much less reliable player.
Yeah, we'll see. I think this is a key year for Dennis Smith Jr. without question. Like, this is his chance now. By the way, this would be his he's been in the league 2 years. So, like, this is like senior year in college. Like, this is the time for him to really show that. Whereas, you know, I mean, listen, Jonathan Isaac, you know, there's been moments. I did raise my eyebrows even now because, I mean, listen, it's obscurity playing in Orlando as it is. But, you know, I still think that he is. I guess you want to reclassify him as from going from a project to now a solid NBA player. Is that where you were going with this?
I think he's starting to take the leap to being a good starter and, you know, and is showing some of the potential that can make him an all-star one day.
Interesting. Okay.
He's very far from that, completing that potential. But I think last year it emerged that he could have pretty massive defensive impact and is figuring out how to be a scorer. And, you know, with his size, he can be really, really good.
All right. Well, you know what? I will now put Jonathan Isaac on notice. I will be watching you. I will have my eye on you a little bit closely now because Jared told me to. So we shall see. But it's an interesting moment. You know, it's funny. I was at a run last week, last Wednesday night at USC. And like, well, a lot of European pros were playing. And it's sort of open, but they had refs. And there was a few like pretty good high school players involved in there too, but I just felt like it was just a startling reminder. I guess it had been a while since I sort of watched an open run with refs like that. The game is just so different now than it was, you know, 20 years ago. Like, I feel like in a gym with pros in that setting, you know, there would have been ball movement, there would have been some weak side screens. You know, now literally it was like, you know, one-on-one, rotating one-on-one. And because everybody can now handle the ball pretty well. Everyone can shoot off the dribble pretty well. And they're all allowed to do that. And it was really striking to me, just to throw this out there, that like, you know, if this is the metamorphosis of the game is gone in the last 20 years, like I can't only imagine, you know, what's going to happen, you know, 10, 15 years from now and what the game is going to look like.
What's really funny is that I just had the exact same thing happen where I just got back from New York where I was watching a run and Julius Randle and Enes Kanter were going one-on-one. And that was kind of like the featured matchup of this pickup game. And Randle, every single time, wanted to take him ISO from the winger from the top of the key. And Randle was – I think it's because Randle was working on a step back three, which is there, by the way. I mean, it was one game. We'll see. But like it looked pretty good. You know, Randle is showing really good wing skills. And so he was just, you know, I feel like even 3 years ago, Randle would have tried to take him out to like kind of the short corner area and try to drive at him from 15 feet. But Randle was just treating him like he was a wing. It was trying to get him out 25 feet, put him, you know, put him on an island and get by him. And it was working because Randle's handle has gotten very good. And he's really got that step back J going from three now. So he's going to score a lot of points for New York this year, that's for sure. But it was interesting to see the way that his approach was just a lot different. And I think probably during these summer runs, a lot of these guys are trying to work on some of their perimeter skills. And so that's why they're focusing on that.
Yeah, although, you know, it's funny. I feel like I'm one of the only Randle apologists out there because I've been having to defend him. I think he's, you know, even earlier in his career when he simply would only go left, which is probably still the case. Well, do you see him go right at all?
Yeah, he went right. He did.
All right.
He's still – I mean, he still is like clearly stancing himself like he's trying to tech left. But, yeah, he had one where he caught Kanter on his hip and was able to get around him and finish – I can't remember which hand he finished with, but he drove down the right seam.
Okay. Yeah. Great. I mean, and again, finishing the left hand isn't such much of an issue. It's if you go to the right, you can always come back, and it hasn't affected him. You know, that's the thing is he was a monster. He was a beast, a double-double machine. And last year, you know, again, people probably weren't paying much attention to New Orleans for a lot of that year after AD's issues. That, you know, he was 21.4 points a game, and he shot 52% from the field, and he did shoot 34% from three, and almost three a game. And I think I did. I know I did a video on the Pelicans, what they're going to look like, and I know I spotlit him at least for a minute. He's good, and he's a handful. And all right, so maybe he's not like the most amazing player on defense, but he's going to certainly outweigh that, I believe, on the offensive end enough. Where, you know, he's just I don't know how teams are going to handle him, especially with a different team this year with more space. And now if he really can, I would have no problem saying, yeah, he'll shoot better than 35% from three. I think this is the progression that we see him going on. And how do you I don't think that he's going to be easily stopped.
Yeah, based on what I saw last week, he'll probably be shooting towards the higher 30s, which, I mean, if he's doing that, he's probably scoring 23, 24 a game for New York. I mean, he's making a push for the All-Star team. Although, I mean, who knows how the points are going to get distributed, but I think he's going to be in a pretty comparable role with the Knicks to where he was at the Pelicans last year. So, yeah, I mean, he's a big that can, that can get you 20 plus points a game. Those are pretty rare in the NBA. And if he's a more perimeter oriented big, then he's not messing with your spacing. So you can get away with playing him at the four. And then the question is really just, can he have the attentiveness and the intensity to defend in a switching scheme? If he can, then Randall could be a very valuable player.
Right. And he should play center.
Well, so that's the thing is he's a little undersized defensively to play center, but he's 6'9", so he can do it. I mean, he has like a Draymond Green like physical profile, right? So the question with him is mostly about the mental side. That's what makes Green great. For one, I mean, he's getting paid what, 19 a year on average. I think that's a totally reasonable market value for him. I mean, hell, Caris LeVert. We'll talk about this in a second. Caris LeVert's getting a little bit less in a non-ridiculously open market because, Randall was had the advantage that the Knicks had to splash their money on somebody. So that's kind of part of the reason why he got paid, that much. But like, I mean, Randall, yeah, he fits almost everything you want out of a small ball five, except for just not having the defensive awareness and consistency. But he has all the tools there.
Do you experience stress or have anxiety or chronic pain or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? You're not alone. Many of us do. I deal with the stress of having to grind videos every day. Plus, in season, my sleep schedule is completely screwed up, and everything in my life, from my body aching to my relationships, were suffering because of it. I was willing to try anything to help, and that's when I discovered Feels, which is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. Feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. I've used it, and I've got to say, it didn't take long for my stress to melt away. I was much more relaxed and able to get quality work done, like the breakdown of the Australians beating Team USA. It's super easy to measure the perfect amount each time, and just place those few drops under your tongue and let it go to work. Feels offers a free CBD hotline and text message support to help guide your personal experience. So try Feels and feel better naturally. No high, hangover, or addiction. If you join their membership, you'll get it shipped to your door every month, pause or cancel at any time. Become a member today by going to feels.com/breakdown, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/breakdown to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Join me in reducing the stress and anxiety in your life and head over to feels.com/breakdown. I'm looking forward to seeing the Knicks because, they got some pieces, and it's a question of whether they can actually, get them to play together and play like a team and all those tropes that we hear from coaches. But certainly they have something there. And I always think that, Randall is a guy that gets, the short end of the stick a lot of the time when people are talking about the NBA. But let's talk about Caris LeVert a little bit because, that's the one bit of news we've had this week where he signed an extension with the Nets. And it seems like Brooklyn is, you know, again, if you had to, is there a more sort of impressively run team the last 2 years than the Brooklyn Nets?
They're high up there. They're really high up there. And I have the Celtics fans always screaming about how frustrating it is to watch that. So I've been paying attention to them closer than a lot of other front offices. And they have just done such a great job of mining for talent with players that were being undervalued or discarded elsewhere. They haven't really had a miss. Like, who? I can't even like think of someone who they really invested time or resources or money in that didn't work out. Well, right. DeAndre Jordan, we'll see what happens there. But like, I mean, they've hit on every single one. It's been incredible.
Yeah. And like, and the point I've been making all summer long is, you know, they were sixth in the league, sixth in the Eastern Conference, and they're better. They're going to be better. Now, again, the whole Eastern Conference is going to be kind of wacky now, but they're better. Now, do I infer from the your Celtics, you know, bat phone that are they nervous they're going to be a little bit worse this year?
The Celtics are going to be worse?
I mean, they're fourth in the conference, just about 49 games winning, but they put Kemba in there. What do they think? What's the Celtics beat right now?
I think they're looking to be in the mid to high 40s as their most likely outcome. So
same as they were.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to be in a pretty similar position. I mean, last year went pretty poorly, so I mean they could still, with all the talent that they have in the wings there, if those guys are all playing really well, they could take another step forward even with everything that they've lost. But I think it's reasonable to project them as being a mid-tier Eastern Conference team. I mean, somewhere between the third and sixth seed is probably the best, you know, best guess with them.
So yeah, all right. Then it sounds a little bit unreasonable to expect like the Nets could step over them, but it's not completely unheard
of
to see a young team. What's that?
That's not unreasonable. They have Rodion Skurix. It's very possible.
I like Skurix, by the way. Yes, he's you can plug him in a lot of different places. And they lost Jared Dudley, but they replaced him and others with some serious talent with Kyrie. I guess the only thing is it almost doesn't matter. It's that they have a free season at this point because they're waiting for Durant to come back. And, hopefully he comes back even somewhat close to his normal powers. But even then, right, this is sort of like they're playing with house money this year just to kind of develop and get an identity and then plug him in.
Well, the thing is, to their credit, what Atkinson and Marks have really achieved there is that they never looked at any of these seasons as wasted seasons. They were always focused on developing every single year, even when they didn't have their own draft picks. And I think they have to take that same approach. I mean, this is Irving. Irving is entering his prime now. He needs to show that he is going to take that leap to the next level. He showed it once in a while in Boston, but it wasn't consistent enough, and just everything was inconsistent there. So, I mean, he has to set the tone for this team for the next year, where they have a chance to be a serious title contenders. But there's nobody in the East that you look at and you go, that team is perfect, that team is a clear juggernaut, the way you could probably say that about the Clippers. Where I feel like on the show we're starting to say that about the Warriors again, thanks to Dave Dufour's hot takes. But, there's no team in the East that you can say like the Nets can't be better than if everything works out. Like, they have enough talent. They have a balanced enough roster. They have a good coaching staff.
Yeah, and I like what you said about that, how they've always focused on developing players and winning and creating that culture no matter what the deficit was of talent. And now you're seeing it. Like, Kurucs is a guy that, like, who knew? And they plug him right in, and he's able to do really well. And then Caris LeVert has been, like, I guess it was a surprise, but I can guarantee you the players and the team watching him in the summer, like, before in those games would have been like, this guy's going to be a serious scorer. You know, they re-signed, they got Spencer Dinwiddie locked up. They have, like, the really high character guys. Real professionals. Yeah. What's that?
And Dinwiddie's on a good deal. And don't forget, LeVert was projected to be a lottery pick, but injuries had him fall in the draft. And he has had injury issues, so he's been pretty much what you would expect out of that. But yeah, when he's healthy, he's really good. And I'm very interested to learn if there is some sort of injury-related clause in his contract, actually.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. But he did come back from the injury pretty well. Looked like his old self. Certainly by the playoffs, he was doing as well as he had done before. And, I know they got, they were a little bit in this deer in the headlights with their playoff experience there. But then again, that's another one of those good building blocks. It reminds me of these teams that we used to see that would stay together for a number of years. They would take some lumps. they, you know, inch forward, and then they come back, and all of a sudden they just they're hardened veterans, ready to play together. The only question now is by adding Kyrie, you know, having you seen it up close with the Celtics, you know what that's going to be the biggest wild card, is whether or not he's going to make that jump and become the teammate I suppose he needs to be, absent Kevin Durant. And then having DeAndre Jordan there as well to you know play the center position in case Jared Allen is struggling, I don't know, that might be the one thing that's the biggest question mark for them and might keep them in that same range of maybe 45, 46 games and winning.
Yeah, and you know you just have no idea what to expect with Kyrie right now, and I'm not saying that based on just the traditional Kyrie Irving slander, but just that. He hasn't talked at all. I think the last time he talked publicly was his outgoing press conference after they lost the final game of the season. Like, he hasn't spoken publicly, at least, or like interacted with the media. Rather, he's made some statements since signing with the Nets, but he's been a total ghost, which is kind of crazy because he's been in New York most of the time. I still don't get it. But so, you know, Kyrie should have came out and said he's learned from, you know, the mistakes that he's made and stuff like that. He has a plan for how he's going to, you know, make sure that what happens in Boston doesn't happen in Brooklyn. And, you know, what happened in Boston last year was a pretty remarkable confluence of events happening simultaneously. So it is kind of hard to replicate how much of a shitstorm that is. Yeah. So Brooklyn is probably in better, you know, in a better shape because of that. And there's a very clear hierarchy with Brooklyn. I don't think, you know, not, there is no, like, Boston having that mystical yes. playoff run is really a huge part of what changed everything, plus the Hayward thing. So, you know, Brooklyn, I think their hierarchy is pretty clearly set in stone. And then they're going to go through that next year with KD returning. But I don't really think it's going to be an issue, obviously, between Kyrie and KD.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Now, if you're watching the FIBA games, I did a breakdown on the Bumas beating the Team USA. Kemba Walker didn't start in that game. Very strange. But when you watch him, he's unstoppable. Like, the guy is amazing. He did start against Canada, a much weaker team, and they won pretty easily. Didn't play a ton of minutes. But, you know, just to wrap this up, with the notion of the Celtics plugging Kemba Walker in there, I mean, this guy looks – here's the thing. I think, you know, we've seen this before where guys, you know, they're working out all summer long with Team USA. They have a good tournament, and they come right in and they hit the ground running in the NBA because they're still in shape and they're still, you know, all tuned in, whatever. And I feel like Kemba Walker's ready to do that and come in. And, again – and, by the way, he's playing with half the Celtics team already. So – That might actually smooth that hierarchy out as well, because in my mind, there's no question, if they let him be the man, and he's the guy running everything like that, the way he should be, like he's doing with Team USA, then the Celtics should be able to take a jump and go up.
You know, what's funny is, so, you know, we were just talking about that LeVert contract, and he's one of these restricted free agents that's up for an extension. And you got guys like, I think Siakam is up, right? And then Jaylen Brown, Brandon Ingram. But the same draft class guys, Buddy Hield, I think, is as well. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see how that LeVert deal is going to impact those guys, because Jalen is out there playing. He's playing leading up into his contract negotiation phase, playing pretty well, at least it's so far, for Team USA. And I'm wondering if that's going to impact negotiations for him, because if LeVert's getting 17.5, maybe he is going to come down a little bit on what he's asking for, because I think he and LeVert have been pretty comparable so far in their careers as far as, you know, output. But Brown obviously has been healthier and I think has established himself more on defense. But, you know, the expectation has been that Brown's going to just say, give me the max. Otherwise, I'm pretty confident I'm going to bet on myself to get close enough to the max in free agency next year.
Yeah.
So I still can't imagine they're going to get an extension done. But this seems to at least maybe move his market down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, by the way, and Tatum's a guy who's not, you know, doing himself any favors right now. His play hasn't been impressive at all. Brown has been better. And I'm curious to see. We'll have to save that one for another discussion because we'll probably have to wait until the season anyway to really keep your eye on it. But keep your eye on that, because that might ultimately be the key to their success, is if Tatum isn't going to be what we thought he was going to be and Brown is continuing an upward trajectory, then they're going to have to slot their roles that certain way, and Tatum's going to have to be willing to do that. And if he does, then they'll be good, because then he'll be a third or third guy, and that's good versus a second or first guy, which I don't know if he's getting there right now.
Yeah, that's a pretty big question. I can tell you the one thing that's noticeable about Tatum is he is big. He is big as hell. He's starting to fill out more. Maybe it's the 70 cell hair, but like he's looking like one of those like super long, you know, wings, like a Durant-esque kind of size player. He's not quite as big, but like, he's starting to fill into that kind of form. And I think he's gonna be better off than what you're saying. But
we'll see. Well,
who knows? Maybe he'll suck
on him and put him on notice too. The list is growing now, so we'll see. But Jared, anyway, thanks for the quickie in here. We'll get it off and we'll get it out to everybody. But we will talk to you, I guess, next week.
Hey, you know, I'm always good for a quickie.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, not a channel, we're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Jared?
I'm in Springfield.